From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of July, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And we'll discuss those fires in Canada and how all of that smoke is making its way across a good portion of the Corn Belt with our meteorologist for the day, Mike Tenora, T-Star. Storm weather in Chicago. We'll also discuss the agricultural outlook for the Midwest and the Corn Belt as it relates to heat and rainfall and dry conditions as well, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Hey, just a quick reminder that this afternoon, Dan Zwicker will be our guest on Commodity Week, and we'll record that at Riggs Beer Company outside of Urbana. That's on Route 130 across from the Case dealer there, Berkey's. If you'd like to join us, you can do that. If we're in the middle of recording, please don't interrupt. Just wave at us. I'll say hi to you. You'll see that I'll have a little microphone in my hand recording. That'll take maybe half hour, 40 minutes or so, but by 4:30, certainly you can come and drop by and talk with us if you want.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn settled at $5.64 and a half today. That was down 7 1/4 cents. December at $5.61 1/4, 7 1/4 lower. And the March corn at $5.68 3/4, down 6 3/4. August beans, 23 lower. $14.16 1/4, the settlement price. The September, $13.69, down 28 3/4. And November down 27 1/2 cents at $13.62 1/4 on the settlement. Bean meal futures down $6.60 and the bean oil 46 cents lower. That settled at $65 even. Soft red winter wheat in the December down 18 1/4 at $7.50 1/2, and the hard red December at $6.64 3/4, down 15 cents for the day. Live cattle futures finished at $126.67 1/2, $1.42 1/2 higher. Feeders were up $1.42 1/2 at $158.20, and lean hogs at $91.72 1/2, down 67 1/2 cents on the afternoon. Crude oil for the day at $71.69 a barrel, $1.39 higher. Gasoline on the RBOB at $2.24 9/10 of a cent, $0.05 higher, and the wholesale price of diesel fuel or heating oil is up 4 2/10 at $2.13 1/10 of a cent. Ethanol futures unchanged at $2.32 for the day. U.S. dollar at 92.835 is up 0.076, and the Dow at 34,751 is 62 points higher. Now joining us to take a look at the marketplace is Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. Thank you, Matt, for being with us. I guess, first of all, you've been busy with the county fair. How are things going there in Shelby County?
Yeah, actually, our fair, usually the people move in on Sunday evening, and then, we wrap up with the auction on Wednesday night and a little bit of a fair cleanup Thursday morning. So the fair's pretty much done and over with. It was a great time. This was our 9-year-old's first year being 4-H, eligible to show and whatnot. And so he had a really good week, a lot of fun. And so, it's one of those things where I had to remember that he's just 9, because I think I asked my 20-year-old beau, "Where's Toby?" at least 100 times this week, because we said, "Hey, you know what? As long as you get your work done, just come check in with us every now and then." But at that age, it's just there's so much going on that they just want to go have some fun.
How much fun! He was in the show ring with cattle.
Oh yeah, he showed a steer and he showed a heifer. He actually got reserve grand champion with a steer, and then he was able to get champion rated gain with that steer as well. So he had a pretty good little year. We started out, on a high note. It's going to be kind of hard to top that, I guess.
Yeah, so much fun to be in 4-H. Glad you and he and the rest of the family were able to do that at the county fair this year. That's a great thing for the summer months. Now, it's been a pretty good corn market. Today was, I think, a surprise for everybody that it went lower. There was a little half-cent gap still left to fill yesterday, and the December contract didn't make it. I thought it might try at least overnight, and it just decided to turn around and go down. Why was that the case?
Oh, I think there's a couple, three different things going on. First of all, the market's maybe just a little overcooked here lately. I think some folks are wondering why we continue to go up. Now, I know there's no question that there's some weather issues in the upper Northwest. We know that. And the bottom line for me is that whenever you also see some Chinese cancellations on exports, you know, it's just pretty tough to see that this thing's going to continue to go. Now, there's a lot of different ways of looking at this because production eventually, you know, it's going to be hard to handicap, but you've got to think that you're going to draw back national yield some up there. But how good is it in the East is the big question.
Yeah. So as a cash grain trader, an elevator operator at one time, this is the kind of the time of the year when things can really drop off of cliff. I made note, however, though, in the last day that basis at my own elevator tightened up. It was only by a penny, but it did tighten up. Well, what's your thought process as we go into the end of the month of July related to the cash market?
Well, you know, I think the cash market is going to be pretty snug, especially in some areas. You know, I'm hearing of, you know, some of the ethanol plants actually scaling back a little bit just due to the fact that profitability has been tough to come by. Now, I think some of that's got a function to do with basis. By all means, I mean, there's not a lot of corn available. And so, you know, ultimately, you're going to have a grain system that's going to be fairly empty going into harvest. And I think basis is going to be pretty good. And it's going to take a little while to really get everything, you know, primed, if you will. And so I do think basis stays a little bit better for a little bit longer, maybe than what some might assume. But at the same time, here in Central Illinois, I do think once you get started and rolling, Todd, I think you would probably tell me that you're going to have some awfully good yields up there, you know, west of Champaign. And I think down in here where we're at, we're going to have some awfully good yields as well. So I think at some point, there's no doubt basis will have a different function, you know, and you're probably going to have to weaken that basis a little bit once you get maybe halfway into harvest or better.
Your beans look better this week than they did last week or the week before?
Yeah, our beans look really good. I mean, we're very fortunate, like right in here close to where I live, we have a lot of tile, and we didn't see a lot of yellow beans as compared to maybe some of the more poorly drained soils. We've got some of those as well. And so when we get away from home on some of our other farms, we definitely saw some yellow beans. You go look at them this week and they look just a little bit better. We haven't had that steady dose of rain, got a little bit of a chance to breathe. And you know, while the sunlight's not been what I would exactly hope for, I mean, it's been a little hazy here several of these days, but you know, we've at least had a little more sunlight than what they'd had for quite some time.
In Chicago, beans lost four times the amount that soybeans or that corn lost. That's not the right ratio. Why is it that they were down so sharply?
Well, you know, some of these forecasts out 2 weeks or so is trying to turn a little bit wetter, especially the runs this morning. Now, over the noon hour, it looked like they dried up just a little bit compared to what they were earlier today. And so, you know, yes, we lost 27 and a half cents on no beans, but at the same time, you closed 20 off the lows. And so I wouldn't say it was ideal, but I mean, it was a big range today. I mean, your range today was pushing 50 cents. And so you closed 27 and a half lower. Yeah, you're in the middle of that, maybe a little bit more towards the bottom side than the upside, but definitely a situation that could have been worse. For me, 1362 beans, though, are still awfully profitable, and I don't know that I want to get too down on, you know, selling those if a person feels pretty good about their own production.
Have you looked out into next year and thought about sales?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, 22 beans, 1255, 22 corn, $5 and a quarter. I know fertilizer costs are going to be up just a little bit, but at the same time, I mean, you have to understand that fertilizer costs, if you quantify them, let's say they're going to be up $75 an acre, for a 200 plus grower, you know, you better drop that price. I don't know, maybe 35 to 40 cents. We could call it exact at 37 and a half, but you know what I'm trying to get at. You know, and so if you'd have told me last year with last year's fertilizer prices that you could get, for instance, 465 basis of board for corn, for new crop sales, I think a lot of folks would have been dying to sell that corn. So we've got to be careful as to lose sight of where we came from there last year just because we've had such a good rally this year.
And last week during our conversation, you mentioned that the northeast part of Iowa wasn't looking that great. I thought you actually made just a slip up. That was not the case, apparently, because I drove part of that on Sunday. Not looking so good. What are you hearing from them this week?
Yeah, so we've got several guys in that part of the state, really all over the state of Iowa, but definitely up in there. Some of these guys missed out on several rains, awfully dry, not a whole lot of subsoil moisture. Did get a couple of rains to kind of keep them going, but as comparison to the rest of the state, there's no doubt that they have their hands full as far as raising above APH type yields on corn right now. Definitely a good production area, a lot of usage there as well. So it could have some implications that could filter out, whether it come across the river into Illinois or you go north, but definitely struggled with a lack of rainfall this summer.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, the NCGA, the National Corn Growers Association, is strongly opposed to a bill introduced in the U.S. Senate this week, referred to as the Corn Ethanol Mandate Elimination Act. NCGA says the legislation would remove the implied conventional biofuel blending requirement from the renewable fuel standard. NCGA President John Linder states the bill is ill-conceived and would have a devastating impact on air quality, the diversity of our energy supply, fuel prices, and rural economies. Senate Republicans Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania and Susan Collins of Maine and Democrats Dianne Feinstein of California and Bob Menendez of New Jersey introduced the bill. The lawmakers claim the bill would help reduce carbon emissions from fuels by removing the volume requirements for corn ethanol while leaving in place the volume obligations for advanced and cellulosic biofuels and biodiesel. Senator Toomey states the RFS drives up the cost of gas and food, harms our environment, and damages engines, calling the RFS a backwards policy. By the way, the RFS does not include a mandate for corn ethanol. It only includes a mandate that ethanol be used from some source. It just happens to be that corn is the most economic of all the sources that are available. Now, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack yesterday named Daniel Whitley as administrator of the Foreign Ag Service. Whitley most recently served as acting administrator for the USDA branch. Prior to that role, he was the associate administrator responsible for leading the agency's trade policy and market analysis teams. Whitley began his career with the Economic Research Service. Well, SIU, Southern Illinois University Carbondale, is collaborating on a project testing the use of electricity to control weeds in agricultural settings. Carla Gage, Associate Professor of Weed Science and Plant Biology, is working with researchers Mandy Bish and Kevin Bradley from the University of Missouri on testing the Annihilator 6R30 Weed Zapper. The tool is a patented electric weed control unit mounted to a tractor. The multi-state project is funded by the North Central Soybean Research Program with support from the Missouri Soybean Merchandising Council. And finally today, restaurant sales and price increases. Consumers ramped up restaurant spending during the first half of 2021. Restaurant sales posted an increase in June as consumers continued to burn off their pent-up demand for socialization and experiences, according to the National Restaurant Association. Restaurants registered total sales of $70.6 billion on a seasonally adjusted basis in June, according to the preliminary data from the U.S. Census Bureau. That was up 2.3% from May sales volume and represented the fifth solid increase in the last 6 months. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On this Thursday, let's check in on the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Kind of a warm, hazy, muggy sort of day here in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, certainly in Champaign County. I assume you have similar conditions there in Chicago, Mike.
Yeah, we certainly do. And that haze is mostly due to smoke from wildfires in Canada and the western U.S. It's pretty amazing to see the coverage and the depth of this smoke. It's really filtering out these skies And we think that's going to be a constant theme throughout the rest of the summer and probably the fall, because typically fire season really gets going a month or two from now, and we're already dealing with some pretty major issues.
Yeah, so while there is a haze and it's smoky, generally speaking, it does not smell like smoke. I know last week when I was in Fargo that their air quality was not good, and that's kind of the same across a lot of the areas throughout the East Coast now and the Midwest that have got the smoke. And what is it that drives it so far to the south from those areas in Minnesota? Because those areas burning are way up on the northern edge of the nation.
Well, it just depends on the wind flow, essentially. A lot of these fires in Canada that you're talking about are taking place to our north, and we have northerly winds at the moment, and that's taking that smoke and driving it southward. On top of that, we have all these wildfires off to the west in parts of California and Oregon in particular, and our winds often originate from there, especially the upper level winds, because remember that winds blow from west to east most of the time. And so these fires are so large and there's so much smoke that the smoke is getting way up into the atmosphere and then getting picked up by the jet stream and then getting pulled across the United States and across Canada. And then on top of that, some of these winds are picking up new smoke, like we're talking about, to our north. And so we just have a lot of smoke out there. It's pretty amazing. It's quite actually alarming, in my opinion. I mean, this is not something you normally would ever expect to see. And I certainly don't remember anything like this in my lifetime. And it has been smoky many times over the last 5 to 10 summers, but not like this, and certainly not this early.
Yeah, the only other events that oftentimes are referenced historically are volcanoes, when the plumes are big enough that they create, they really do create a weather condition for the atmosphere. And we talk about, I suppose, a cool down sometimes. I don't know whether this is that kind of an event, but I suppose if it's long enough and deep enough, it could have an impact.
I don't know all the dynamics that go into the two different scenarios, but one difference is probably that when you have a major volcanic eruption like Mount St. Helens, or maybe even more so Mount Pinatubo back in the early 90s, it's such a force that it pushes all that ash and everything very, very high into the atmosphere. So it basically breaks right through the first few miles and gets high up into the stratosphere. And then that circulates the globe over time as all the particles are dispersed over the course of a couple of months. So this smoke is probably much lower as opposed to what a volcano would do. But for all intents and purposes, it's still a big problem because it's filtering out the sunshine, and it's keeping temperatures lower. It's hard to say exactly how much lower because you can't take the atmosphere that we have today and then say, hey, tell me exactly what would have happened if this happened a year ago with the same atmosphere and no smoke. We just don't have the capability to do that, except to say that it's certainly dropping it a few degrees, especially during the daytime. So say temperatures might normally pop up to 95 or 100 in the Western Plains with this setup. We're only topping out within 5 degrees of that. And again, it's all primarily due to this smoke. So it's very thick, and it's amazing.
Given that, we are going to pop up into the upper 90s for much of the Western Corn Belt, I think, over the near term. And what are conditions like over the next week or so across the whole of the Corn Belt?
Well, it's going to turn a lot warmer. It's already starting as we speak, and we'll see a heat wave for the western half of corn and soybeans going forward. High temperatures will be in the 90s most days, with low temperatures in the 70s. And we think we're going to pop the hundreds several times later next week across the southwest third to maybe even half of corn and soybean production. So we're talking about Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, the southwest half of Iowa, parts of the Dakotas, maybe even into central and southern Illinois, especially closer to Missouri. So a big warm-up is on the way. And even people to the north and east across the rest of the Corn Belt, they won't be as hot because a couple of cool fronts will move through from time to time, and the core of upper-level high pressure that is driving all of this will generally stay just to the south and west to keep the rest of those corn and soybeans warmer than normal, but not necessarily hot most of the time. So all in all, just a lot warmer and certainly much different than what's been going on over the last 4 weeks.
Just 9 more days left in the month of July. Is hot the word through the end of the month?
I would certainly say so. I don't think there's much arguing you can make with the amount of heat that's coming up. Again, for the northwestern, maybe western half of corn and beans, as you move to the east, it's not going to be cool, but it's not going to be too hot. We'll just say a little bit warmer than normal. But keep in mind that one of the ways you can get a really big corn crop is to have it stay unusually cool for a long, long period of time. And we've certainly achieved some of that with 4 weeks of very cool weather. But typically in scenarios like we had in 1992 or 2004, those stayed very cool all the way through the end of July, through most of August, and maybe even into early September. So this is going to deviate from that, at least in the near term. And then we'll have to start thinking about what happens next.
Any rainfall events in the next week?
There certainly will be rain in these areas that are along the northeast edge of the high, and that will generally be the northeast third to half of corn and soybean production. So parts of Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, more than likely the northeast third to half of Illinois, and possibly even into parts of eastern Minnesota and eastern Iowa. So those areas will see some additional rainfall. And it's areas to the south and west that probably won't see a whole lot, but we will see some showers and storms here and there. But at this moment in time, we don't need rain because most areas were near or wetter than normal over the last 14 days and even over the last 30 days. The only exception to that is across the Dakotas and into western Minnesota, where corn and soybeans certainly need a lot of rain there, and they certainly need it sooner than later. They're probably not going to see a whole lot through the end of the month. And then these areas off to the south that are actually doing pretty well at the moment, they might start to need more rain once we get about a week out from now and then into August if this whole forecast pans out. So it's not an ideal weather forecast, but it's certainly being helped by what happened prior to this period, which was a wet and cool stretch.
Any indication of what August will look like?
Well, the first 5 days of August don't look too threatening at the moment because it appears to us that the upper level high that's going to turn all these areas hot for a while will more than likely retrograde to the west. And what we mean by that is that instead of moving from west to east like we normally see, it will actually move from east to west over time. And that's just a function of atmospheric dynamics when you get a big high like this. Typically after a week or two, it starts to drift westward, and that would then allow a cool front to move across the Corn Belt. So we think it's going to turn a little bit cooler in the first week of August. But the big uncertainty now is that a pattern change that's going to then mark what it's going to be like for the rest of August? Or is it just a little blip in a developing heat wave for the rest of the summer? And this is always the type of thing you think about at this time of the year. But we do have a little bit of concern over this because the upper level high is not going to suddenly disappear. It will always be a threat to overrun the Corn Belt throughout the month of August. But at least in the first 5 days of the month, it doesn't appear that it's going to be situated in a location where we have to worry too much about it. So we'll start thinking more about whether 2 to 4 weeks from now, a week out from today. So it's just a little bit too far into the future to get too much, get too caught up in all the details of it.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
That is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon.